welcome to Free Talk Live. You can join the program here. You can bring up whatever is on your mind. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. There's something that the so-called fact checkers are focusing on today. And I wish I had.
Well, thank goodness we have the fact checkers out there to look into it.
This one is pretty. Of course, it's always, you know, it's going to be propaganda when the fact checkers are claiming a thing. But this one is pretty undeniable. And I wish I still had the wording from what Twitter was saying about it earlier today. But they were basically calling the statement that Joe Biden made about the New World Order to the, like, calling the whole thing into question, like, oh, well, he didn't mean what he said. And so, and here's, in case you haven't heard what he said, here
you
it
know,
is.
We are at an inflection point, I believe, in the world economy, not just the world economy, in the world. It occurs every three or four generations. As one of them, as the one of the top military people said to me in a secure meeting the other day, 60 million people died between 1900 and 1946. And since then, we established a liberal world order, and that hadn't happened in a long while. A lot of people dying, but nowhere near the chaos. And now is the time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. We've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it.
I mean, it's a lot of buzzwords, really. Shifting paradigms and all that sort of nonsense. He didn't actually say paradigms. I kept expecting him to, you know, paradigms are shifting and we got to be on the forefront of it. But, you know, for Twitter and all of these other people, like, oh, he's not talking about like new world order. It's like, we can't pretend this terminology doesn't have some baggage.
It doesn't mean
right?
anything. It's just a few words he put together. It was an accident that he said that. No, political speeches, first of all, he doesn't write it. Somebody true. Else wrote that for him, and that's true of like all presidents. There's speech writers as a job in the White House. Somebody wrote that, and these words are chosen deliberately. This wasn't some accidental thing. This isn't something that you should just brush off. Oh, there's no big. No, this is the president of the United States who is calling for and announcing the New World Order here. He's saying there is going to be a New World Order and we've got to get in front of it.
A lot of people dying, but nowhere near the chaos. And now is the time when things are shifting. There's going to be a New World Order out there.
Yeah.
And we've got to lead it.
Yeah.
Wasn't George W. Bush the last president we had who like just routinely talked about the New World Order?
He's certainly on video saying it from like 1989 or 1990 or somewhere in that range. Maybe you're like right around when he got elected. Wait, did you say George W. or George
H.W.? I meant George W. But I'm sure they were both doing it.
No, it was the original one. Maybe the later one said it too. But
well, George W. did the devil horns thing quite a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're all, you know, skull and bones or whatever. But
it's suspicious, man.
There's an old clip that goes way back of George H.W. Bush talking about the New World Order. And I believe Luke Radowski posted it earlier today. I didn't actually watch the video that he posted, but I think it was like a compilation of all the times that politicians have said that have referenced the New World Order. I'm not going to play this whole thing, but here is.
I mean, there's no doubt they've been planning this for decades.
Yeah, here is an old clip of George H.W. Bush.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. A world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations.
Yeah. Anyway, he goes on, I'm sure. But there are other examples, you know, over the years of various politicians saying this thing. And for, you know, a long time, people have poo-pooed this like, oh, well, it's no big deal. It's just people talking or whatever the excuses are about it. And it's very clear.
Well, that's all the Bilderberg group is, right? Yeah. It's just a bunch of people talking. In a room, a bunch of billionaires and world elites sitting around talking, planning things.
Right.
Nothing suspicious or untoward about any of it. It's just talking, just words, meaningless.
It's talking about how to reorganize the system to implement greater control over people's lives. That's what the New World Order is. It's not about freedom, as Biden suggested there in his speech.
No, it's about the Great Reset.
It is, and that's why, you know, it's interesting that Biden trotted out the terms New World Order when those words do have a lot of baggage. There's some other story I saw where they're recommending to politicians to not use that terminology because the most recent...
Yeah, think.
The most recent... one of the most recent times that it came out was there was like an Australian politician who talked about the New World Order during the COVID situation. And she was, I guess, reprimanded or something later on, like, hey, you shouldn't say those things. So I'm surprised he didn't say Great Reset, because it seems like Great Reset is the new code word for New World Order. But regardless,
well, I think the Great Reset is how we get from here to the World Order, right?
Yeah, that could very well be. And RT had actually reported on this earlier today, and they actually referenced which of the Australian people it was. Biden says U.S. must lead New World Order. So the actual person I was referencing here. Quote,
wasn't it just a few days ago that someone else was talking about one of the reasons that we have this war going on in Ukraine is because Russia is trying to resist the creation of this New World Order?
That's what some people are saying, yeah. I don't know if that's true, but...
I seem to recall people saying this a few days ago, though, right? Like before Biden's speech about the New World Order.
Could be. I do have a story from RT about the World Economic Forum and their Great Reset. So the RT has been publishing things that are critical of the World Economic Forum, for whatever that's worth. But the I just wanted to get the actual quote from Dr. Kerry Chant. So this appears at the end of the RT story about Biden saying what he said about the New World Order. At the very end, they say politicians and government officials have previously received criticism for using the term. Most recently, Dr. Kerry Chant, the chief health officer of the Australian state of New South Wales, she said during a September COVID-19 press conference, quote, we'll be looking at what contact tracing looks like in the New World Order. And we actually played that clip because I saw that as well. Journalists and other social media users criticized Chant for using the term, with a former journalist, Chris Urquhart, writing that, quote, government officials would be well advised to avoid phrases like the New World Order when they're talking at press conferences about massive limitations on people's freedoms. And that's good advice, but ultimately, I'm glad the politicians are doing this. They don't care, really, if you know what their plan is, because they know there's very little that people are going to do about it. I mean, just look at the last 2 years with the COVID insanity and how people have been just completely abused, and they just keep taking it.
That's sadly true.
Yeah.
But even if we wanted to do anything about it, it's not like there's any political machinery in place that would allow us to actually do anything about it.
What do you mean?
Like, the entire system is set up to perpetuate itself. That's sort of what it does. The Republican-Democratic system working on the same team, like pro-wrestling, pretending to hate each other out there in the public. And, you know, it riles people up, and then they vote for the Democrat, and then they get upset, so they vote for the Republican, and it just feeds upon itself, and it just becomes impervious to any actual penetration from someone who would want to actually do something about it. You end up having, you know, bait and switches thrown out there, like Donald Trump. Oh, he's going to drain the swamp. He's an outsider. He's going to go in and shake things up, but in reality, he's just another one of them, right?
Yeah.
So when people get too fed up with Biden and the system and, you know, the Clintons and all that, they'll just throw out a new Donald Trump. Hey, here's your new outsider.
Yeah.
He's going to come in here and promise to drain the swamp, and then he's going to do none of that.
I know Trump wants it to be him again, but we'll see how that pans out in the next few years. There's a good chance there's going to be a swing back towards Republicans at the national level this year when they have the midterm elections, and that, of course, will just bog things down in D.C., so hopefully fewer things will get passed, but, you know, it's not going to change anything.
Trump only won because of his Twitter presence, though, and he no longer has that, so...
That's true, and apparently he's not posting on his new Truth Social. He posted one time on the first day it launched and
has
not posted since. So we can continue here. Whether you want to talk about the so-called New World Order, the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset, whatever is on your mind, you can join us here. It's Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live. You can join us here. Ian and Aria in the studio tonight. You can dial in at 603-283-6160. We're talking about the New World Order. It is not just on the lips of some obscure conspiracy theory talk show host, but Joe Biden himself just admitted it during a recent speech, saying that it is it's happening. Basically, we can give you the audio again here, but I've got some other past examples of other politicians referring to the so-called New World Order, and we can share some more of that with you. Again, the number is 603-283-6160. We go to Dave Ridley. He's on the line calling us from New Hampshire. You're on Free Talk Live, Dave.
No, I'm calling from Colorado, actually.
Oh, still out there. Okay. I just always presume you're in New Hampshire, but you go out there once a year for some amount of time. Welcome back. What's on your mind, Dave?
Back soon. But, We the People NH, I guess they're putting together a plan for dealing with the November elections and the primary. So their plan is initially to run candidates in the primary, like constitutionalists, or at least people who they think are constitutionalists in the primary, which is kind of not very unusual. But what is unusual is they're planning on, they have a backup plan. So if they don't do well in the primaries or they feel like they need to, I think they're going to try to set up a sort of an alternate primary, like a second primary, mm-hmm. where they have a vote that's not really run by the government at all, but just a vote of people on forums or something like that, or on websites. Where they just select a write-in candidate so that the write-in process can be organized. And the other advantage, I guess, is that they say that if you have a write-in, then it forces the government to do hand counting to some extent.
Okay. And who is We the People NH? I'm not familiar with this organization.
It's Therese Grinnell's organization. You know Nurse Therese, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a fairly well-known activist that just got activated within the last year or so. She wants to have online voting for her organization to choose primary candidates.
No, I think if I understand correctly.
Well, no,
okay.
not primary, not necessarily primary candidates, but that's something they would do after the primary to pick write-in candidates, so that even if they can't get any progress in the primary, now they have a fallback position of mounting significant write-in campaign.
There's no such thing as a significant write-in campaign.
No, and it sounds like planning to lose, in my opinion. We have this backup plan in case we lose. Okay, well, plan to win and put all your efforts into that instead of having a backup plan in case you lose.
Mike Sylvia, I think, was elected as a write-in candidate, and he was the one who was the prime sponsor of New Hampshire's independence legislation.
I've never heard that claim about Mike Sylvia. It's a Republican district, so if you ran, you know, I think he just ran as a Republican and he won. So.
I mean, probably the best write-in candidate we ever saw was Earl Nelson running against me from sheriff, and he still lost hard. Yeah, and he was the official Republican candidate, right?
With a lot of backing, unusual amount of backing for a write-in candidate.
This is around 2015, I think, when Sylvia was elected that way. But I know that when I go to vote, I tend to not vote for the candidates that are on the ballot anyway. I do a lot of write-ins. So it actually would be nice if there was an organized person that I could vote for. I mean, I voted for Daryl Perry for president, you know, in the general election. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, no one else was organizing for him, and he probably got, you know, a couple hundred votes that weren't even counted. So it would have been nice if there had been an organized write-in campaign for a Liberty candidate for president. I would have liked that.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's really just symbolic more than anything else. Yeah. It's really not worth putting any time or money into. But the only time where being a write-in candidate could actually make a difference would be actually, I believe, if I recall correctly, at the primary. If you can get enough write-in votes to overwhelm whoever else is on the ballot at the primary, you could then make it to the general ballot in theory. That's probably your best chance to attack as a write-in candidate if you can, you know, pull that off. But again, that's still a relatively difficult thing to do, although it's a little bit lower bar simply because not as many people will vote at a primary.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this organization, these are mostly people who want to run as Republicans, right?
Almost certainly.
Probably.
I can't imagine they'd have a too hard of a time finding positions for which to run.
In many cases, there are no Republican candidates or no Democratic candidates running, depending on what the district is. Some of them are, you know, hopelessly Republican or Democrat, and in many of those cases, the other party doesn't even bother fielding a candidate. Keene is like that, for instance, where if you run as a Republican candidate, you get on the ballot because there's almost no chance that any other Republican is going to run in Keene because they know they're going to lose to the Democrats.
So
in
what
the
you
area.
Do is you get the Republican running where they have no chance of winning, but you also get the Democrat is one of your people, right? Like
that'd be nice, yeah.
That way you win no matter what.
If we had enough people, but then the Democrat also has to defeat the Democrat incumbent
that's the more difficult
and
part.
And that's no easy challenge, but it would at least give them a Liberty candidate as an opposition in both. Rounds of the election, both the primary and
surely
the
in some of these positions it can't be that hard. Like who really is running for, you know, treasurer of the whatever? You know, they have a long list of register of probates and stuff like that. Who's really running for those things? Surely you could get both a libertarian to run for a Republican and a Democrat for that position.
And in some cases, even where it is the Republicans who are the main party in a given area, they still are going to have trouble finding people that want to do this job, the job of state representative or whatever we're talking about here. So in many cases, it is simply whoever steps up is the person who gets that nomination, because there's almost no chance that anyone will challenge you at a primary level. So those who are willing to simply get involved in New Hampshire politics can have a very good chance of winning, especially if they're willing to actually do the ground level door-to-door kind of door-knocking work of actually going and meeting the voters in a given area. That's how Matt Santanastasso won.
He was the person I was thinking of when you mentioned that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a local state representative who was one of the co-sponsors of the New Hampshire independence legislation. He went door-to-door, and he won his first time out. He had never run for office before for anything, and he was elected to state rep. And I believe, I don't remember if the incumbent ran against him or if the incumbent just said, you know what, this guy's going to run. I'm not even going to bother to run. I forget exactly which one it was. So he either beat the incumbent or convinced the incumbent to not even run by simply filing for the office. And the dude gave up.
One thing you'll probably agree with that she's doing, or it looks like she's going to do, is she's not going to do this like in small races. This is not something for fixing the state house. You know, she recognizes, I think, that that's a fairly open process already and fairly accessible. But this is they're aiming at the governor's race and these federal races and some other big things, I think, where there's really not much hope anyway. So that's one good thing. But I think I did tell her this, and she's seeking advice, by the way. So if you've got better ideas, tell her. But I told her, you know, it doesn't sound like a bad idea to me, but you always got to remember whatever you're doing, it means there's something else you're not doing. So
yeah, she's a very nice lady, but she's somebody who is obviously brand new to this, and she could definitely use some advice from people who've been around the political scene and they know a thing or two about how things work. Because to me, it sounds like a huge waste of effort.
Yeah, why bother? The political system is broken. Find some other way to change the world.
I mean, run some candidates, but don't spend your life trying to get a write-in candidate elected. That's a total waste. Thanks, Ridley. Appreciate your call. There's more coming up on Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live's video archives have been on Library for years. Library is an uncensorable, decentralized, blockchain-based media sharing protocol, and we're big fans of it here on Free Talk Live. In 2020, Library launched Odyssey, a video sharing website to compete with YouTube, and it's really taking off, now with over 1 million channels, many of whom are disaffected YouTube creators. During YouTube's crackdown for not towing the government line on COVID, the Free Talk Live YouTube channel started receiving strikes and could be completely taken down at any moment. Thankfully, Odyssey started offering live streaming, so we're now streaming live every night and posting our video archives permanently to Odyssey. You can watch live or anytime on our Odyssey channel by visiting video.freetalklive.com. If you want to go all in, download the desktop app at lbry.com, and then every video archive you watch, you'll help seed and keep it online forever. At minimum, we ask you visit video.freetalklive.com and follow us on Odyssey today. video.freetalklive.com. It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. With you tonight in the studio, it's Ian.
And Aria.
We're talking about the New World Order. It is a concept that has been admitted to over the years by people in very high places, like George H.W. Bush, as you're going to hear in just a few moments, the Clintons. You said you think George W. Bush mentioned it. Wouldn't surprise me as well. Also, Joe Biden, of course, recently, just recently, the other day, apparently, within the last 48 hours or something, admitted the New World Order.
And he talked
well.
About a lot of people dying, which is unusual for mentions of the New World Order. Like, you know, hear George H.W. out there going, oh, we're going to usher in a New World Order of freedom. I mean, a lot of people, there's been a lot of death, but now we can all celebrate our New World Order of freedom. That's an unusual take for a president to have when discussing this issue.
Yeah, so let's see here. He said, where's the actual quote? There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. We've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it.
What they mean is they have to rule it. They don't want to lead it. They want to rule it. The difference there is that a ruler is someone you don't choose. There's someone who says, obey me or be punished. Where a leader is someone you choose to follow because they inspire you.
Yeah, that's true. And it so frustrates me when people call politicians leaders. Because most people do not trust politicians. Most people, at least that are sane, know that when a politician's lips are moving, they're lying. But yet for some reason, when election time comes around, they still pick their favorite politician and think that somehow their favorite politician is going to change things. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And they all do seem to have this mantra of the New World Order. And this goes back to what you were saying about the Democrats being no different from the Republicans. It's very hard to really differentiate them significantly. They both love the state. They love to make the power of the federal government even larger over people's lives. And they only quibble about the details. You know, they're like wrestler. They're like pro wrestlers who act like they hate each other, but then they, you know, have coffee together and, you know,
And I hate to talk about the Bilderberg group because it's so mysterious, right? But there are leaks of documents that were written from people who actually attended these meetings. And if you go back and you look at the ones that were, you know, released from like the 1950s, the 1960s, and you read them, you can see them telegraphing things that are going to come to pass in the 80s and the 90s. Mm-hmm. So when you read the ones from the 80s, I think the most recent one that I had access to was from like 1988 or something like that. You could see them clearly laying out a blueprint for what was going to happen in the early 2000s and the early 2010s. And sure enough, all of that stuff, one way or another, did ultimately happen. There was the fall of, you know, the Soviet Union and the East German, the German wall, the wall of Berlin is the word I'm looking for. Yep. All of that stuff that they were planning for back in the 50s and the 60s, it did in fact come to pass. So what were they planning in the 90s and the 2000s that is now coming to pass? I don't know, probably some pandemic, some wide-scale experimentation with paranoia and fear.
Matt was in here the other night with the Illuminati cards. I guess they had like a card game, kind of like Magic the Gathering, called the Illuminati. And it's got all these cards that you could say were kind of predictive of what was to come. And one of them was like a pandemic where there's, you know, injector on it and a mask or whatever.
Alex Jones is wrong more often than he's right. But
it's true. He
was back there talking about, oh, they're going to stage a pandemic and they're going to use it to get everyone sterilized and to enforce this new world order and everyone's going to be enslaved. He's wrong, but he did mention there would be a pandemic. And sure enough, there was one.
Here's a couple more mentions of the New World Order going back to, they say this was 2001, immediately after the September 11th attacks, like the day afterwards.
There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, I think, only once and hasn't been used since, and that is a new world order.
That was a person's name is Gary Hart. He's on the U.S. or was on the U.S. Commission on National Security, according to this video footage from C-SPAN. And, of course, the next person, you'll recognize her voice.
A new world order, a new set of challenges is confronting us, both domestically and abroad.
A historic role in trying to make sure that there is, after all, a new world order.
And the phenomenal opportunities before us to create a real new world order.
That's Bill Clinton.
George Bush has invoked
a new
world
order. Well, who was the other guy then?
Bill Clinton.
Without enunciating a new American purpose.
They sound very different between the two examples of Bill Clinton.
Different, yeah, probably different time frames or whatever. John Kerry.
Much has been said by the Secretary of State and others about a new world order.
So, I mean, this just goes on. This video is four.
This is totally not alarming at all.
4 minutes. They got Henry Kissinger in here. I'm just zooming through UN ambassador's dinner, talking about an independent world order. Joe Biden from a completely different clip here. Let's see what he had to say previously. I don't know when this was taken, but it looks like maybe during Obama's administration.
An incredible window of opportunity to lead in shaping a new world order.
This isn't the new one. This is an older clip of Biden talking.
I want to apologize to all of our pothead listeners who are out there like having panic attacks and, you know, paranoia attacks now, thinking about the new world order conspiring against them. Because one of the first times I ever heard this terminology was when I was really, really high, back when I was like 18 or 19 years old. And I just spent hours freaking out because one of my friends was just telling me this sort of stuff, and I had never heard it before. So I apologize to anyone out there who's really, really high and this for the first time. It's not going to get any better the deeper you dive into it.
Well, speaking of going deep, we're going to get into a story you brought in here in a little bit about the so-called deep state and Joe Rogan saying a thing or two about that recently. But since I mentioned that, I do have this story from RT. It's an opinion piece by Rachel Marsden. She's a, I guess, a producer of some talk shows in France, or in French and English, also a columnist. So she writes this column over at RT, "Why does this influential, unelected globalist entity really exist?" Talking about the World Economic Forum. She writes, "When Canadian parliamentarian Colin Carey of the Conservative Party asked Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's government recently on how many Canadian ministers were actually, quote, on board with the World Economic Forum agenda, unquote, before his connection so-called broke up in the video conference."
Like when NASA's feed suddenly cut out when something mysterious appears in the corner of the screen.
Did you hear about this when it happened?
No.
Yeah, somebody told me about this, that they were, it was like during the time when they were having the hearings about the state of emergency due to the truckers, and somebody asked a question on the floor of Parliament in Canada about the World Economic Forum, and they were, "Oh, what's that? Can't hear what you're saying there," and like let the guy go or something like that. I didn't watch the clip, but wow. Supposedly they claimed technical difficulties and then just ignored the question about these people.
I wouldn't put it past them.
So he and the Canadians he represents deserved an honest response rather than accusations of spreading so-called disinformation, as left-leaning New Democratic Party MP Charlie Angus did. The World Economic Forum, WEF, colloquially known as Davos, for those familiar with the annual pilgrimage by the international elite to the eponymous town in Switzerland, has been on the tips of many tongues over the past 2 years, notably within the context of the COVID-19 crisis. Just before the COVID pandemic, on October of 2019, on the 15th, the organization announced that it was holding a, quote, live simulation exercise to prepare public and private leaders for pandemic response, unquote. If that sounds oddly coincidental, buckle up, because it only gets weirder. Speaking at a United Nations video conference in the fall of 2020, Justin Trudeau raised eyebrows with a hint of a potential link between the global pandemic and the World Economic Forum. Quote, "This pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset," said Trudeau, saying further, quote, "This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change."
How could they be so transparent about this while openly getting away with it? Right? That's my question here. We know he's using the same language as the World Economic Forum. We know what they're planning. Yeah, we know what they're planning. They've made it very, very clear. How are they getting away with it?
I mean, the truckers tried to stop the tyranny in Canada, but tyranny kind of won. There's a lot of cops.
In the U.S., all they managed to do was drive around in some circles for a few hours.
I heard they actually went into D.C. last week, the truckers, for the first time. And were followed by the police the entire time and basically didn't step out of line in any way, shape, or form. Because otherwise we would have heard about it, right? There's more coming up here. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You can join the show and bring up whatever's on your mind here. The number is 603-283-6160. The New World Order, Joe Biden It's once again something that politicians are admitting to. He said, quote, there's going to be a new world order out there. In a recent speech at, apparently it was a business roundtable CEO quarterly meeting.
Some more rich people sitting around talking about how they're going to redesign the world to better suit their needs.
Yeah, it's Ian and Aria in the studio tonight. And if you want to protect yourself, the best way to do it, in my opinion, is to get your value out of fiat currencies like the dollar. Now, yes. Whether you put it into gold and silver or Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, it's up to you. But you know they're going to start printing the dollar even heavier. They've been heavily printing it in the last 2 years, like at record levels. Some people have said as much as 80% of the dollars that exist today were printed in the last 2 years. I don't know if I believe that claim, but when they say it's like 30 to 40%, I find that pretty believable. But somebody showed us the numbers the other night, and it's a shocker. And they're just going to keep on cranking at it. So you can guarantee the value of the dollar is going to go down. So what you ought to do is learn about the alternatives out there. And Bitcoin Cash are something you're going to learn about if you go to Bitcoin.com and you click on Get Started at the top of the page. They'll let you buy Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash as well as other cryptocurrencies there at Bitcoin.com. You can do what is the most important part is to get the basics down. Learn some of the fundamentals that make cryptocurrency different from government monies. And you can do that over at Bitcoin.com. Click Get Started at the top of the page. You can also get the latest news headlines anytime over at news.bitcoin.com. So be sure you head over there and check out the various features that they have waiting for you. So we're talking about the World Economic Forum. This is an editorial piece over at RT.com, one of the now most difficult websites in the world to access. In countries,
well, in the West,
yeah, in countries like the European Union, and there's also the Australia and Canada have banned RT on television. What YouTube has completely banned RT's channel globally. They started by just doing the European Union, then they decided to just go ahead and ban them.
I mean, does completely. Their website RT.com or whatever it is still work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, you can access RT's website in the United States.
Well, that's until, you know, Spectrum and all of these others, ISPs, get pressured by the government into disallowing access, and you have to connect to a VPN just to find out what the other side of the war is saying.
That would be a very disturbing threshold to cross in the United States in the supposed free speech country.
It does seem unlikely.
So I'm hoping that we don't see that happen, but in a lot of the rest of the world, it's very difficult. So anyway, going back to the story here written by Rachel Marsden, she's talking about Justin Trudeau and comments that he made in the fall of 2020, which essentially echoed the talking points of the World Economic Forum at the time, talking about using the pandemic as an excuse to, quote unquote, reimagine economic systems that address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change, he added, evoking a reset concept much promoted by the World Economic Forum from the onset of the pandemic that frames the crisis as an opportunity to fundamentally change the way that developed societies function. Then in August of 2021, Dutch MP Gideon van Meijeren asked Prime Minister Mark Rutte about a letter that he wrote to the World Economic Forum's founder, Klaus Schwab, in which he said that Schwab's book, COVID-19, The Great Reset, published in July of 2020, within the first few months of the pandemic, quote, inspired him to build back better, unquote. The phrase also happens to be the name of President Joe Biden's legislative agenda.
Yeah, that's suspicious.
Which includes increased wealth transfer into the murky black hole of climate change and social spending.
And you know, all of this sounds really, really scary. But at the end of the day, I'm not overly concerned about it because I know that these people are not as smart as they think they are. They're not geniuses. They're not capable of running the world in the way that they think they are. The world will do its own thing, whether they want it to or not. Black markets will rise, and they will ultimately overpower whatever evil designs these people have.
Well,
freedom will win.
I do agree with you. I am optimistic, no doubt about it. But I'm not going to act like these people are fools. I mean,
I don't think they're fools, but they're not the geniuses capable of running the world from a top-down standpoint that they think they are.
Well, obviously, their plans are going to go astray, I think. I mean, they're not going to be as perfectly implemented as they're attempting. But that's not to take away from the fact that people involved in the World Economic Forum, these aren't just, like, thinker types. They've got doers. They've got people who are CEOs of mega corporations like Walmart and Bank of America and mega corporations, international global level kind of companies that are on board with this agenda.
But what are they on board with? Because we
tried to clear.
I know we tried to figure it out one night by reading what this Carl Schwab guy, I think that's his name.
Klaus
actually had to say about it. And it's just, it's nonsense. It's a word salad.
It is. But it's a word salad to cover up the, you know, whatever his actual beliefs are. And I remember there was a clip of Klaus Schwab or an image from, it was presumably his home that, you know, everyone's in their homes for the pandemic or whatever.
Oh, I'm sure he's got a nice house.
He does. But in the background, there was a bust of Stalin, I believe, or Lenin. Was it Lenin or Stalin? Either way, it was a real bad guy. Like, he has a thing for some insane communist Russian dictator in the background. Like, you don't have Stalin or Lenin or Hitler as a bust in your home and say, oh, well, I just like his hairstyle. That's why I've got the bust.
Even if you do like Hitler's hairstyle, right, you're bound to be able to find an example of that on a less controversial figure.
Yeah, so let me go on. So the author here at RT says, it would be easy to chalk it all up to creepy rhetorical coincidence if there wasn't an actual link between Schwab, Davos, and elected officials like Rutte and Trudeau.
See, I don't think it would be easy. Even without this link, you have all of these people using the same terminology in the same context. That, to me, itself is enough to suggest a connection. Once you have the actual connection, it goes to, okay, this is actually alarming, to be dismissed.
They're all in the same club. It's a link which even Schwab himself has bragged. In 2017, he told an audience at Harvard at John F. Kennedy School of Government, quote, what we are very proud of is the young generation. Like Prime Minister Trudeau, we penetrate the cabinets. He's not kidding. Current Canadian Finance Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland is on the World Economic Forum's Board of Trustees. For listeners that may not know who this person is, Chrystia Freeland, I didn't know who she was until the trucker controversy happened when they were trying to freeze bank accounts. You remember that in Canada?
I remember the trucker thing happening.
They were freezing people's bank accounts during the trucker situation.
For
there,
donating
the Freedom
to
Convoy.
Them.
Yeah. And this woman,
GoFundMe pulled the plug on them, I think, as well as some of those. Just really highlighting the need for cryptocurrency.
Correct. Chrystia Freeland was the woman who was announcing all those account closures and freezes and things like that. So she is like basically number two to Trudeau. That's who this person is.
The finance minister.
She is on the World Economic Forum's Board of Trustees, alongside former Bank of Canada and Bank of England Governor Mark Carney. Freeland was last seen announcing asset freezes and crackdown measures against truckers and supporters in the streets in Canada, demanding an end to heavy-handed COVID mandates and restrictions. That is, the truckers were demanding that, not her.
And I wonder if this sort of article is the reason why governments in the West don't really want us to have access to Russia today.
That's why I say, you know, what don't they want you to see? And Carney recently qualified the Freedom Convoy as sedition in a hysterical opinion piece published in the Globe and Mail newspaper.
The Freedom Convoy was the Canadian one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The one they call in the United States is called the People's Convoy. It's only logical that when citizens start seeing visible World Economic Forum branding on those taking or publicly advocating for drastic and unprecedented liberticidal measures against them, that's a new word for me, liberticidal as in the killing of liberty, they start asking questions about the nature of the organization's influence. No citizen in any country actually voted to adopt the Davos agenda, and it's debatable whether a sufficient number actually would. According to its own website.
No, it sounds horrifying. Even your most diehard leftist would be like, ooh, I don't know, man. They've got, you know, George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan on board with this thing. I don't think I really want to have anything to do with it.
You mean like the idea of you'll own nothing and you'll be happy? That's the World Economic Forum.
I think the left would be happy about that particular part. It's the fact that, you know, you also have people like George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, his son, going on about how this is such a wonderful thing.
We got more coming up here. You're welcome to share your thoughts on the World Economic Forum. Their agenda includes increased digital integration and digitization. Sounds like the metaverse.
See, that's where they screwed up, though. I saw an article today. I didn't click it, but it was about how, you know, people are already sick of NFTs and the metaverse.
Oh, good.
It's like, it's already on a downward slope, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, I Pretty sure we told you that was going to happen.
On the NFT thing. I mean, the metaverse basically doesn't even exist yet in any meaningful sense. But yeah, the NFTs are obviously a fad, and I hope that they go down, like, big time.
So, I just hope not too many innocent people lose money in them.
Well, what are you going to do? More coming up here. 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. At least you got your monkey picture. Join liberty-minded voluntarists, anarchists, and libertarians from June 27th through July 3rd for the 6th annual ForkFest at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival, which sold out for the first time in 2021. ForkFest takes place the week after ForkFest, but ForkFest is decentralized, which means that there's no ticket cost and no one is in charge. All you have to do to join the fun is reserve your camping site, RV site, or motel room with Rogers Campground for June 27th through July 3rd. There's no better place to celebrate Independence Day than around other freedom-loving activists in the Shire. You can find out more at the unofficial website, forkfest.party. You can also connect with other attendees on the ForkFest Telegram and Matrix chat rooms, as well as the ForkFest forum. You can find links to those at forkfest.party. We hope to see you there. ForkFest.party.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. We're kicking off the second hour of the program. The phones are open here. If you want to join the show, the number is 603-283-6160. We are sharing with you the news that most of the Western world does not want you to hear because it's coming from RT.com. Actually, in this case, it's not news. It's an opinion piece written by a woman who does, I guess, podcasts in French and English or talk shows, independently produced talk shows. Her name is Rachel Marsden. She wrote a column. This actually appeared in late February, but I've had it in my show prep just because I knew we were going to talk about the World Economic Forum at some point.
Well, they make it hard not to talk about them.
They become very visible. Like, they've been around for much longer than COVID, but they became very visible during COVID, pitching this great reset idea as, oh, this is the great thing about this pandemic is we can bring in all these new ideas, or a new world order, as Biden referenced in a recent speech, kind of brought this whole conversation about. There's just a few more thoughts here from RT's columnist, where she talks about how they have a vision for a fourth industrial revolution. This is from their website, their own website. Their agenda has an increased digital integration and digitization, urgent climate change response, which is just a total power grab on the part of the state.
Oh, absolutely.
And
I mean, if there's climate change, then the climate will change, and there's not a lot human beings can do about it.
Never has been. Fourth industrial revolution, they define this as characterized by a range of new technologies that are fusing the physical, digital, and biological worlds, impacting all disciplines, economies, and industries, and even challenging ideas about what it means to be human.
What does any of that mean?
Like you said, it's like a word salad of all these buzzwords just thrown together. What are they really trying to do? That's never made clear by the World Economic Forum.
Are they trying to turn us into batteries where we're just like plugged in and they harvest our physical bodies while we live in the Matrix or whatever?
They would like that. I mean,
it does sound like it.
Batteries don't talk back.
That's true.
Yeah. The organization is also exploring the notion of quote unquote human enhancement. And those are just the aspects that are public. It all sounds like it has the potential to give rise to a dystopian reality, particularly coupled with the previously unimaginable measures taken by democratic governments under a sanitary pretext over the past 2 years. And who or what influences the organization itself? A massive list of multinational entities with fiduciary obligations to increase shareholder wealth, according to the organization's website. I mentioned a few of them to you earlier, you know, Walmart, Bank of America, humongous international megacorporations. The World Economic Forum would like for the average citizen to believe that everything it does is for our own interests, but it's difficult to imagine what the organization's backers actually gain by empowering average citizens rather than maintaining control over them.
Why would this organization be doing things in our best interest? Like, the things I do are in my best interest, but I don't expect even the locally owned businesses here in Keene to do things that are in my best interest, much less a mega corporation like Bank of America or whatever. If they're planning something, it's not going to be in my best interest. It's going to be in theirs.
Well, I mean, the businesses that are local are doing the things that are in my interest if I agree with them, right? Like, if I want Jamaican food...
But they don't care whether you agree with them. They're going to do what is best for them.
Well, that's true. But if not enough people agree with what they are doing, then they're going to go out of business. So to some extent...
which is why we don't have to worry about having laws against racism and stuff like that, because the market will sort of take care of that at this point.
Normally, when you're in business, you don't succeed unless you give your customers what they want. Now, obviously, you can't make everyone happy, and nor should you try to do that. And you don't have to make everyone happy in order for you to be a successful business. You just have to make enough people happy to where you can pay your employees, pay your rent, and make a little bit of money to take home at the end of the day and hopefully retire on.
Right, because it's in their best interest to make their customers happy.
Correct. Because when customers are happy, then you win. And that's true in general, whether you're in business to serve a direct customer or whether you're an employee and you're serving your boss or employer or whatever. Your employer has to be happy or you don't keep your job.
Good point. So, it changes when there is a monopoly.
Exactly. And the thing that, of course, allows for monopoly is government force, where they will kill you if you try to compete with the existing monopoly. And they will say, oh, well, you can't do this. You can't offer Bitcoin services because we said so. And then, you know, they point guns at you. That's the kind of thing that they do, and they do it in these mega industries like the banking industry. You can't just go roll out your own bank. You can't just, you know, you can't just hang a sign out on Main Street and say, hey, it's Aria's Bank. Come on in. We're giving you great deals.
But you should be able to, right?
You should be.
It's such an obvious thing. If somebody wants to give me their money and have me keep some sort of record of it so that, you know, they can make a, you know, some sort of digital payment or something like that, and I'm able to have the infrastructure to make that happen, I should be able to do that, and so should they.
Yes, and risks are obviously involved. There's no...
risk-free. I wouldn't loan out their money to random people I don't know, and they'd be like, oh, sorry, I guess I just collapsed the economy accidentally.
So whether you're going to a government-approved bank, you're still at risk, even though the FDIC insurance is there, and that's what everyone's supposed to feel good about. Oh, if the bank fails, the government will back you up to $250,000 and restore your account. Or whatever, but
maybe in the United States, in the United Kingdom, that they have a law in the books that they passed after the 2007 recession, allowing the United Kingdom to basically reach in and take, I think, up to 30% of the money directly out of your bank account if the bank decides that they need it. Things just like take your money.
That kind of stuff happens in a lot of places.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't hear the story about the UK, but I believe you. Greece, of course, I believe, or Cyprus was known for giving quote unquote haircuts to their bank account holders. It happened in Argentina 20 years ago, I think it was.
But here in the United States, we have companies like Wells Fargo, who were busted back in 2008, 2009, of opening up duplicate accounts in the names of their customers so that they could earn additional interest and just basically create themselves more money.
Sure.
And it ripped off their customers in the process, and they had to pay, you know, some $75 million fine to the SEC or the whatever government agency said, hey, it turns out you can't rip your customers off in that particular way. You have to do it this way. So these companies like Wells Fargo, Bank of America, they're not any better than the ones you have in the United Kingdom or in Cyprus or Greece or wherever, that are just taking a little off the top. That's what the American banks are doing too. They're just a little more subtle about it. So
I guarantee you, if we went through a list of the World Economic Forum members and looked at who the corporations were, we would find highly regulated industries that benefit from government control, and they do not care what people think about them because they're quote-unquote too big to fail. They'll get government subsidies in order to stay in business, even if they start pissing off enough of their customers with what they do. But the final thought she has here in the story: nonetheless, what is glaringly obvious is that the World Economic Forum serves as a clearinghouse and consolidator for ideas that promote a one-size-fits-all global agenda that has become interchangeable with the Western establishment status quo. There's nothing more undemocratic than elected officials serving any other master than their people. Much more light deserves to be shed on this supranational entity, its string pullers, and the extent to which their agenda trickles down into our daily lives. And I totally agree with the idea that people need to know about this organization. They need to be aware of how as the word they used, penetrating, they are. They talked about how they're penetrating into government cabinets. They penetrate into mega corporations. They've got their fingers, their claws into a lot of business and government in at the least the Western world. I don't know how much in Asia or whatever, but you know they've got similar organizations of power brokers
there. Well, that's part of the New World
there.
Order, right? Is that, you know, they want the Western world to basically rule the entire world. Whether you don't have an Asian economic forum, you just have the Western one. I mean, there probably
like
is one, but the
it might just be the Communist Party.
The World yeah. Economic Forum wants theirs to be the one that rules sure. over the Asians.
Well, and that's why the idea of global government, which has always been the big scary conspiracy theory for many, many years, is just too hard to stomach, because the people who are running, you know, the show, if you will, in Asia do not want to be ruled by the people in the West. And the people in Africa, for instance, do not want to be ruled by the people in Europe or whatever. And so there is always going to be this conflict between organizations like the World Economic Forum and the Chinese Communist Party or whoever it is in Asia that might be a similar group. So I don't think that you're going to see one global government anytime soon, but they certainly do want their new world order, and they're not hiding that fact. The number here is 603-283-6160. What does Joe Rogan have to say about it? Coming up. Yeah! Yep, it's Free Talk Live. Phones open here if you want to join the show. Ian and Aria in the studio. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And you can join us online anytime over at freetalklive.com. We do have a social media website that we actually post on. Apparently, Donald Trump has not bothered to post on his Truth Social nearly a full month after it launched. Actually, an entire full month. It launched on February 21st. So, on February 21st, the news, of course, about Truth Social, Donald Trump's new website, which is, by the way, running Mastodon, a modified version of Mastodon, which is the exact same software that is running at social.freetalklive.com and thousands of other independent social media websites out there. They're all federated together. I haven't actually checked to see if Truth Social is federated, meaning that, like, you should be able to, if it's federated, if they've
Yeah, but they changed the back end a lot, didn't they?
I don't know. I've not been on their site. But first of all, I'm not allowed to without permission.
I'd have to ask permission, and yeah. I don't want to ask permission. I kind of do just to troll.
Secondly, you have to have an iOS device.
Oh.
Unless they've released the Android thing in the first month, but they didn't have it on
launch.
Why
can't you use, like, Element, or not Element?
A web browser?
Or Tusky?
I don't know. Maybe. I haven't tried Tusky. That's a good question. Good question. But what you're pointing out here is that Mastodon has these independent apps.
Yeah.
So you can just download a bunch of different apps and use your favorite one. And anyway, the news here from Mediaite.com is that not only did the Trump Social, or Truth Social as it is called, have a rocky launch where there was all kinds of errors and issues and sign-up bugs and difficulties that people were having.
I mean, that was kind of inevitable, right? Donald Trump's kind of a big deal. Mm-hmm. And when he launches his own social media server, I would have expected to have maybe millions of worldwide users
sure.
on launch day.
It's possible they weren't ready for the load of users, but they had months to prepare for this.
Yeah,
so,
but they're inept.
Apparently. But according to the story here at Mediaite, there were people asking about Trump's whereabouts. Where is Donald Trump? Where are you at? Says one conservative columnist. As of March 21st, 1 month after the launch of Truth Social, Trump has only posted on his platform one time. On February 21st, he posted, quote, "Get ready. Your favorite president will see you soon." And that is it.
Ouch. Does it even have, like, an aide or an assistant posting there for him? You know, there's just completely abandon it.
Why would he do this?
Like, because he's an egomaniac wanting to know how many people he can get to join his stupid server.
Before he even tweets, like, a second time, or toots, or truths, as they call it here. He's got 640,000
followers.
See,
that's the thing. It's almost like a parody, right? Like, Stephen Colbert's truthiness, or whatever it was that mm-hmm. he said back then. You know, of commodifying and quantifying the concept of truth. And Donald Trump has taken that and he's built his entire social media platform on that idea of quantifying truth somehow, where you'll find the only real truth, the most truthy truth here on Donald Trump's. Social. Yeah. But he's not even there. So maybe that's
so
the point.
Bizarre.
It's truth. It's truthiness is
it's too truthful
unrivaled
for him.
Because he's not there.
Maybe he's waiting, like you said, until he gets enough followers to where he finally feels like it's worth his time. I guess 640,000 just isn't enough for him, because that's apparently what he's got right
now.
Wow. On his website. I mean, there's an image here. I presume this is fairly recent that they took this photo, because the article came out yesterday.
And I'm sure by signing up, you automatically follow him.
I would presume. Our website used to allow us to do that, but they changed the software in a recent update, so now we are only suggested to new users. So it used to be that every new user at social.freetalklive.com would auto-follow some of the hosts. That way, you know, you get something in your feed and it populates something there for you. But now it doesn't do that. So you have to choose to click the follow button on us over at social.freetalklive.com. And I will have to check and see if we can, you know, look up Trump's profile through the search and see if we can federate over there, because in theory
that would be so awesome.
In theory, Mastodon should allow you to find other people on other servers, but you may have to know their exact username and address in order to find them. I don't know if the search will work, but anyway, we'll find out and we'll let you know. Meanwhile, we go to your phone calls and thoughts coming up. Joe Rogan defending the deep state, apparently. Ari, you've got that story on the way, but first, Sarah is in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live, Sarah.
Yes, there is a company called Tricot, and it's a New York home rental company. And to me, they're definitely a price gouger. So they're taking advantage of the real estate market right now.
And they're called Tricot, and they rent houses to people?
Right, and they operate mostly in the Sun Belt. That's where a lot of people want to move to and live. But their average rental prices are like $3,000.
Sarah, where did you learn about this?
I think they were on 60 Minutes. They were on TV about it.
When?
I don't know, like a couple nights ago.
I'm just trying to get a feel for your lifestyle, really. Like, do you just sit around finding random news things to, like, sit around and ponder on?
Well, like, the whole point, the reason I'm bringing this up...
Is it Tricon, like Tricon?
Yeah, I think so, Tricon, yeah. And Tricon. Then what it is that you rent out a house, like it's a hotel, you don't have to fix nothing. They come and fix everything for you.
You know that's how rentals tend to work, right?
Right. They even have their little vans, right. So then... What they claim is that this is what people want, like the yuppies or the buppies, people that have money. They want a fuss-free rental homes, and then they want the lifestyle. It's really newly remodeled. And how successful they are, and even their companies on stock. But my whole point is, who's got money to live like this? It's very, very few and...
you said this company
people.
Is based out of New York City?
I think so. I think they're New York, Manhattan.
Looks like they have
houses
in a lot of states. I pulled up their website here.
I don't think $3,000 a month is really that unusual for New York.
Well, it's houses in a lot of places, but yeah, for New York that would be on the low side. But in other places, $3,000 would be on the high side. Like here in Keene, you're probably not going to pay $3,000 a month. Although I honestly haven't looked at rental prices here.
I think it would be close to $2,000 a month.
It is probably at least $2,000, though, for like a full-size family, three-bedroom, two-bath kind of home.
Yeah, but they do this mostly on the Southern Belt, like Florida, Texas, and then they have it all the way down.
I think it's possible, Sarah, that you just don't know what renting is like. Because you've been, I mean, for listeners that don't know, you've called this show for a very long time. Your current situation is better than it was before. Before, when you used to call the show a few years ago, you were living in welfare housing. And so you were having
Section 8.
okay, whatever you want to call it, but it's subsidized housing. And that means that you were not bearing the full cost of housing on your own. I want to continue with a discussion here, so stand by. We'll continue on this Tricon. By the way, I did find the 60 Minutes report that she's talking about, so I'm going to see if I can figure out what the controversy is here. Because just somebody charging $3,000 a month for a house doesn't shock me necessarily in this day and age with housing prices and property taxes the way that they are. There's more coming up here, though. You can share your thoughts. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up anything that you want here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Here tonight, you've got Ian.
And Aria.
Don't forget, you can join us online over at freetalklive.com. Thank you to David Itze, who is a supporter of Free Talk Live's AMPS program, which is a Patreon that we launched several months ago to replace our old AMP system, which we had to shut down due to technical and banking issues. But Patreon's been working out well so far, with over 70 people that have subscribed over there, and you can do it for as little as $5 a month. David is doing 10 bucks. He's gold level supporter over at amps.freetalklive.com. AMP stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. It's a way to help Free Talk Live get on more great radio stations around the country and bring new internet listeners to the ideas of freedom. So if you value what we do and you want to help support us, please go to amps.freetalklive.com. As we go to your, or back to your calls and thoughts, Sarah is still with us here. She had brought up an interesting topic. Sarah, you talked about this company, Tricon, T-R-I-C-O-N. Apparently, they own quite a few houses. I did pull up the 60 Minutes story that you were referring to when you first called in, and they interviewed Gary Berman, who is their CEO. They've got about 30,000 single-family rental homes that they rent out across the United States. Their revenue is up quite a bit. They said apparently 67% in just the last year.
That doesn't necessarily mean their profits are up, though.
That's true.
And that was sort of a question I have for Sarah. Sarah, have you ever met a landlord or a rental company that you didn't dislike?
That I didn't dislike? Well, I did have some disagreements pretty much all of them. That's true.
Mm. Are you one of these rent is theft people?
What did you say? What theft people?
I know a lot of libertarian socialists, they hold this idea that renting to someone is theft.
Well, she's a straight-up communist.
Right. Well, so are the libertarian socialists. Yeah. They just don't know it. So do you believe that rent is theft?
Well, the thing about it is the way that these are, this company is a multi, I don't know, that billion. They're worth in billions. And to me, they're all rip-off. They are a rip-off. Because how many people could afford to pay $3,000?
Okay, this goes back to what I was trying to say before we had to go to the break there, Sarah. The history of your life, at least in recent years, has been that you've lived in subsidized housing. You've been getting money from the state in order to pay a subsidized rental price. Previously, I believe you didn't pay either you paid close to zero, right, for your previous place that you were staying?
No. It's a voucher. I pay one third of my income, which was $221 at the time.
$221 a month to rent. What was it? An apartment?
Yeah. Now they're going for.
Just to clarify, hold on. Just to clarify, that apartment, the $221. Was that just paying the apartment complex, and then you had to pay a power bill and a heating bill, or telephone on top of that? What was included for the 220?
No, it was all included, but the
all included.
Wow, that's a pretty sweet deal.
I just want you to know, Sarah, that my power bill last month was $200-something. For the power.
You know what? My income. Listen, you make probably about $5,000 a month with your advertisement or whatever you get from the show. So it goes by your income.
No, it doesn't go by your income, Sarah. That's not. There's no like scale as far as what your power bill costs by income. Normal people who don't live a subsidized life from the government have to go by what they spend, what they use. So if you use a lot of power, if your lights are on all the time, then your bill's going to be higher than if you turn lights off when you leave a room or whatever. So there's ways to have cheaper power bills.
And for some reference, Sarah, despite there being a studio here, $200 for a month of electricity in New Hampshire is not very high. I mean, that shows some turning lights off when you're not in rooms.
So, and we do have a studio here with electronic equipment right. running 24 hours a day. So if that weren't here, it might be like 100 and change or something like that. But Sarah, hold on. Before you go, I just want to continue explaining my understanding. I want to make sure I understood correctly. So you paid $221 a month for an apartment with, was it one bedroom?
Yeah, it used to be a one bedroom. And the market rate was $780. Mm-hmm. It's probably like $830 now. That was about a year ago.
But and now you're upset because you've learned what people are paying in rent out there, and it's so much more than you expected it to be. It's in some cases $1,300, $2,000, $3,000 a month for a single family home. And the story that the CBS News here has from 60 Minutes points out that rents have gone up. And in some cases, they've gone up 30 or 40%. We're talking about in cities. So, for instance, they mentioned here that Jacksonville, I think it's up like 30 or 35%. And Austin, Texas, it's up 40%. So,
you know, you make a really good point. And Sarah, I love your calls, but you've been feeding off of the taxpayer so extensively throughout your entire life that you can't even comprehend what we're talking about right here. These people are paying a rent that is more than 10 times. Hold on, Sarah. These people are paying a rent that is more than 10 times what you used to pay. And yours used to include your electricity bill, your water bill, all of that stuff. These families that are paying more than 10 times what you paid, they still had to pay their own electricity bill, their own right. heating bills, their own phone bills, their own internet bills.
Which may be another $1,000 on top of what their rent costs.
Yeah, these average, ordinary people here that are renting from Tricon, they live in a world that you simply cannot understand because you've been so sheltered, so bubbled your entire life by the government that you have no ability to have any perspective on the conversation.
All right, go ahead with what you're trying to say.
Okay, let me say this. This is the epitome of the crony capitalism, as you call it. I mean,
this isn't crony capitalism.
This is a socialist having no perspective on the real world.
Sarah, they even point out in this story that you supposedly watched, but I don't know how maybe you missed this detail. But the guy they're interviewing who owns this company with the 30,000 houses that they rent, he points out that only 2% of the rental market, quote, corporate landlords represent 2% of all single-family rental housing. Okay? That's nothing. The majority of rental housing is owned by individuals, small mom-and-pop organizations or just, you know, not even companies, just people who have an extra house or a second home or something like that, that maybe they used to live in, that they moved out of at some point and got another place and decided instead of selling their old place, they'd rent it out. And there's a lot of that. A lot of the houses, when you go out there and you apply for a home, because an apartment, you're usually dealing with a corporation, but it's usually not like some mega multinational corporation. It's usually something local, owned by somebody who's local. And so you're dealing with other people who are not cronies of the state in many cases. Certainly not when you go and rent a house, the average home from another human being. You're just renting from another person. And that person has obligations that they have to deal with. They have a mortgage to pay. They have a huge property tax bill in some cases that they have to pay. And somebody's got to pay that bill, Sarah, and that comes down to the renter.
But these people, like companies like Tricon, they're writing up the prices.
No, everyone is writing up the prices. You don't understand what's going on. Because you don't understand what's happening in the marketplace. The marketplace has to respond to market forces. And unfortunately, whether we like it or not, the government is an unfortunate force in the market because it distorts everything. The government, through its inflation, has been driving up the cost of everything by printing more money into supply. And also, in certain areas like Austin, Texas, and Florida and other places, there's a huge migration of people trying to leave places like San Francisco and Chicago or wherever. Wherever the governments are the most oppressive, there's people leaving those places. They're trying to go to the places they think are more free, and that puts a squeeze on the housing market there. So the prices are going up even more than what they would go up by just the normal process of inflation. And that all means that the cost to rents are going to go up. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You can bring up what you want here in the studio tonight. You've got Ian.
And Aria.
Don't forget, you can join us online as well at freetalklive.com. We give you the features on the site for free, so head over there, enjoy those on us. You can also join the chat server at chat.freetalklive.com. It is a Matrix server, which means that it is open source and self-hosted. We're running the thing on our own server, so there's no one else who's in charge of it. Head over to chat.freetalklive.com to get the step-by-step instructions on how to join. We're going to get back to your calls, and then coming up, Joe Rogan on the deep state. We'll find out what he had to say, but apparently he's coming to the deep state's defense. At least that's what Ari has said, and we'll get to the story here in just a moment. But Sarah brought up an interesting topic, and the story that she cited was from CBSNews.com, and they've got the text of the actual video that they put online on 60 Minutes here. So I've been reading through this entire thing. It's lengthy, so I'm not going to share the whole story. But basically, they're interviewing a real estate agent. They interview this owner of this Tricon, which is a mega owner of 30,000 single family properties that they rent out all across the country. So these are people that have experience in the home markets world and are the costs of things, why are the prices going up, etc. And there's an interesting detail here that I just thought was interesting to share, and that is that rent increases are, what they say here, all over the map. They're up 35% in New York. Now, it doesn't say New York City, but I presume that's what they mean because the rest of them are all cities here. But just 9% in Chicago, 29% in Portland, only 10% in L.A., and in only one big city were rents down last year, which is Kansas City. So rent is up across the board, and it's interesting that it's up less in some of the worst places
to be. That kind of makes sense, though. These people are fleeing these places, and they're going to places like New York City.
I don't know why you would go to New York City, but people still think there's something, worth doing there.
I always just assume that when people are fleeing, major cities, that New York City is going to be like the one exception to that. Because for whatever reason, it's the one that people always go to. It's the big city, right?
31% in Jacksonville, 40% in Austin, Texas. And we know that Florida and Texas have this sort of reputation. It's not deserved, in my opinion, certainly in Texas's case, for being free places or whatever. They're obviously not, for those of us that actually understand what freedom means. But
I mean, if you don't mind getting shot at while you're on spring break, sure, Florida's probably okay.
But for someone who's from California, it's going to be a move up. There's no doubt about
that.
That's true. And so they're going to these places and they're putting pressure on the marketplace, and you've got the added pressure of actual inflation, where the government gang is printing out trillions of dollars. And so, of course, that's going to bring prices up. So that's why you're seeing prices are still rising in places like Los Angeles and Chicago, but not as much as they're rising in other places where there's a real pinch on the real estate. They interviewed a real estate agent in Jacksonville, her name Heather Kruyai. And she says there's a lot of Wall Street investors coming in. You put a house on the market, and within an hour, I'm getting offers for full price cash. And these sellers are seeing that and saying, okay, cash, we can close in 15 days. It's very enticing to people when they see that offer come across. And that sounds a lot like what's going on here in New Hampshire, where if you see a for sale sign go up in the neighborhood, there's a good chance it's down in 5 days.
That's insane.
People are getting, not only are they getting asking price, and they have been for more than the last year since people have been leaving other places during COVID, not only are the sellers getting asking price, but in many cases you'll get a bidding war where one person says, I'll pay the asking price, and another person says, I'll pay 5% more. And then the other person comes back and says, all right, I'll beat that, right? So you got real estate agents are playing these customers off of one another and getting the best price possible for the seller.
Sure.
Let's see here.
Isn't that a weird job, too, when you put it that way? It's like their job is to make the buyers pay as much money so that they can who are they really working for here?
Well, there's two agents in most cases. There's the agent for the seller and the agent for the buyer.
Okay.
So the agent for the buyer obviously has the buyer's interest in mind, and the agent for the seller has the seller's interest in mind. And so
there's such a potential for conflict of interest here.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if it's the same real estate agent on both buying and selling side,
or even the same company,
things get a little weird. Yeah, there's definitely some question marks with that. But don't use a real estate agent you don't have experience with, ideally. But of course, if you're going into a new market, you really don't have any idea, which is why a lot of people like using Mark Warden, the Porcupine real estate agent here in New Hampshire. If you're a free stater, if you're somebody moving here for Liberty, Mark Warden is a Porcupine. He's a Liberty lover who migrated here from Nevada, actually. I think he was in Vegas. I think he used to live out in Vegas.
He's also a state rep now.
He's a very successful multi-term state rep, one of the best A-plus rated, two-time winner of the award from the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance for Liberty Rep of the Year. So you want a good real estate agent, Mark's your guy. Don't hesitate to reach out to him at Porcupine Real Estate. But let's go to the phones here. We actually got Richard on the line in New Mexico. Richard, your thoughts. Go ahead.
Yes, I've been involved because of my dad in real estate since 1964. I've been a landlord myself, and right now I'm familiar with Albuquerque, and we have a big housing crisis here in Albuquerque. A couple of days ago on the local radio station, they were talking about real estate here in Albuquerque, and there's only a little over 500 housing units that's on the market right now in Albuquerque. And our average price for a house is about $325,000 right now, because in the last several years, Netflix and Intel has built their company extensions here in Albuquerque. Netflix has got a movie production place here in Albuquerque, Intel, of course. And in the last few weeks, Amazon has announced that in a city called Las Lunas, it's only about 20 miles south of Albuquerque, they're building another one of their big mega warehouses.
And that will put pressure on the housing market, as those employees, many of them are probably moving from another, location to come in there. But you said there are 500 units. Now, just to clarify, is that 500 for sale or 500 for sale and rent?
No, these are 500 units that's for sale is all. With Amazon coming in, they're going to bring people in, I'm sure, from other states for construction and workers once they get this big mega warehouse built. People are coming in from other states, I believe. The average salary.
Would you say, Richard, that 500 is low for Albuquerque? Like, as far as historically, was it more like 1,000 or,
not that long ago, I've had a real estate agent tell me they had close to 2,000 houses on the market, and it's really decreased. And it's the same thing here, that houses don't stay on the market more than probably 10 days to 2 weeks.
That's amazing. Even in a place like Albuquerque, where you would think no one would want to go because New Mexico is such a terrible place for freedom. But I
suspect most people who are moving there, though, they don't know that. They just think, oh, it's New Mexico. It's going to be nice warm.
It's not California.
Desert. Yeah.
It's probably not as bad as California. Richard, thanks for the call. Thanks for the expertise here tonight. Actually, I was just looking at Keene, which is where we do the show from. It's a little town. They call it a city, but only a population of about 23,000. So obviously way smaller than a big city like Albuquerque. But I have looked at the Keene housing market, even though I'm not in the market to make a purchase. This is one of those things that I've kind of kept an eye on for a long time. And I remember seeing in some cases as many as like 100 houses on the market in Keene. It's 16 right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I remember a number of years ago, I don't remember if you and I were discussing it for whatever, the prices of buying properties throughout New Hampshire. And I think it was in Berlin, there was a house there for like $47,000 or something like that. And it wasn't like this rundown shack or anything. It wasn't the best house.
No, it was probably a multifamily.
Yeah.
In Berlin, if you're going to spend $47,000, and back in the day, you'd get like a four unit.
But I'm thinking now that's probably $80,000, $90,000, if it's even for sale anymore.
Oh, actually, you know what? Correction, Arya. According to Zillow, which is what I'm looking at right now in Keene, of those 16 houses, three of them are just lots. Just empty property on which you could build a house. So, yeah, 13 available houses in the market right now in Keene, New Hampshire. If you look at the whole county, it's like 129. There's more coming up here in moments. This is Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
This is Free Talk Live. We're kicking off the third hour of the program. The phones are open if you want to join the show here at 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We started out with news about Joe Biden admitting to the whole idea of the New World Order, just putting it in another speech, throwing it out there.
So we kind of talked casually.
Yeah, we kind of talked about the history of that term, and that led us to a conversation about the World Economic Forum and how they're pimping very similar sounding ideas with their Great Reset. As you put it, the Great Reset is what may lead to the New World Order, so-called. And that
is hard to say. I mean, all of these terms are mostly interchangeable, I think, in the first place.
Yeah.
Because none of them... Although we have a general idea of what they're getting at, we don't really know what they mean.
No, not yet. It's just them marketing the idea of big changes coming.
Yeah, like stakeholder capitalism or whatever it was, the shareholder capitalism, whatever the hell they called it, right?
It's like, which is total corporatism, whatever the hell that means.
Sure.
Yeah. So that leads us to now Joe Rogan, who, of course, is noteworthy because, well, he's apparently the number one podcaster on the planet.
He's worthy. You know, I've watched his show on occasion. I don't get the appeal, man.
Oh, really?
I've only seen little clips.
It's so dull. You've actually watched the full like 3 hours.
I attempted to,
or whatever.
But God, no! It's so dull.
Why do you think it's so dull? But yet it's got what 10+ million or 20 million or whatever listeners.
I wish I knew.
Is it because of his interviews?
Did I find it dull? It just didn't have any energy behind it. Maybe he was having an off day.
Maybe.
When I saw it, but. It wasn't like Alex Jones shouting at the camera for 2 hours or whatever, you know?
He's always got an interview, right? Like, there's always a guest. I mean, you wouldn't know. You only watched one episode or whatever.
Right, and I didn't watch the entire episode. I didn't make it.
Okay. You tuned out.
Yeah.
But was there a guest on the show?
I don't recall.
Okay.
I'm assuming so.
Does he have, like, a crew?
Yes, there was a guest.
Does he have a crew? Does he have, like, a producer?
He does have a producer who he occasionally asks to, like, pull stuff up for him and fact check in and stuff like that.
But he's not interacting with the producer on the air?
No.
Okay.
Not like you and I interacting.
Yeah.
He's just got somebody right there who's like, hey, pull this up for me or whatever, and they do it. Sort of in the same sense that Adam Kokesh, when he does his show, he's got his producers there.
Kokesh will interact with his producers, though. Kind of like their co-hosts.
Okay.
So what you're saying is Joe Rogan's show is a true talk show about the host. It's all about what Joe Rogan wants. It's all about his preferences on interviews and that sort of thing.
That seems to be the case,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe he just didn't have his caffeine the day I saw him, but he very much seemed like he wasn't feeling it.
All right.
And, you know, we were talking earlier about what do these terms even mean. I think it's important here to highlight the term the deep state, because I don't think it means what Joe Rogan seems to think it means.
Well, let's see what he thinks it means, and then we'll talk about what you think
it
means.
Sure. So Joe Rogan defended career politicians and civil servants derided as the deep state by former President Donald Trump and his supporters in an interview with a former CIA officer. And that's where I think the disagreement comes in. I don't think that the deep state is career politicians and career civil servants. Those are certainly things that exist. But I think the deep state is something more insidious than that, something working behind the scenes to ensure that whether or not these civil servants or these politicians are replaced, something behind it continues on. I don't think it's the actual politicians themselves. One of the things that the Tinfoil Hat Brigade likes to talk about is the deep state, Rogan said. They always like to talk about it. What I was saying is, what if we didn't have a deep state? Do you know how screwed we would be if we didn't have career politicians and career intelligence agencies?
Wow.
Yeah, people who are there for a long period of time who do understand it. So, see, I don't think he's thinking of the deep state in the same terminology that we are.
Like the ignorance in that statement. For somebody, and look, I don't know a whole lot about this guy. I don't know who he holds water for. It sounds like apparently the so-called deep state.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
I don't know what his... Well, he's just saying, oh, we can't live without him. So, I mean, that's toting water for him right there.
Okay, that's true.
He's doing their bidding in this particular case. But he's had the... Remember the Robert Malone character, the science guy that he had on who worked for the government and was revealing all this stuff about COVID and how it was, you know, a setup and false and all this, you know, all this shocking stuff. Huh. How he can have guests like that on and take them seriously. Like, it didn't seem like when he was interviewing this guy that he didn't believe him or that he didn't buy what the dude was dishing out. But here he is saying, well, we couldn't live without the deep state.
Maybe that's why he has the appeal that he has, is that he can carry on a conversation with anyone and partially share their perspective as he's talking to them, because he was talking to
a CIA agent.
CIA covert operations officer Mike Baker. When he was arguing that President Joe Biden proves the importance of having a robust government made up of career civil servants. He said, listen, I've disrespected Joe Biden enough, and I don't think I should do it anymore. I've said enough about him being mentally incompetent. He's just compromised. He's an old guy. We know, everyone knows the guy is falling apart, and this is the guy he's saying, we need this guy.
Wow.
But imagine if he really was the only say in how things run and how things go, if he really was a dictator. So Joe Rogan is sort of happy that we have these invisible people pulling the strings behind Joe Biden, because Joe Biden's insane and incompetent. And presumably that's the same reason people are happy with the deep state in regard to Trump. Well, thank goodness someone's, you know, pulling the strings on Trump, so we don't have this maniac holding the keys to the nuclear weapons. Rogan has previously said that he believes the deep state is real. Last November on his show, he discussed the 2016 election and said, look, Trump's not a perfect guy, but this thing he was saying about the deep state is 100% real. And now he's okay with that.
And he thinks we need it.
During his time in office, Trump repeatedly made references to the deep state, accusing officials in the U.S. government of working against him, calling them a threat to democracy itself. So Joe Rogan apparently thinks that's a good thing. And I imagine it depends on where you fall in the political spectrum, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't know what Joe Rogan's political beliefs are. No idea. But
I was always
under
the impression that he was on the left.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. But ultimately, he's a statist, it sounds like.
It would seem that way, yeah.
And so anybody that thinks this guy is a libertarian, now you know he's not. Even though he has controversial guests on who may question the status quo, when it comes down to it, he's pimping the CIA, he's pimping the idea of the deep state, and ultimately, whether you're on the left or on the right, definitely defines what you think about the idea of the deep state. We're not on either side here, so we're going to have a different opinion. When I hear the people on the right wing talking about the so-called deep state, it's usually presented in the manner of, well, if it weren't for those darn deep state people, then we'd have good government. And the people on the right believe that if they can somehow get rid of the deep state...
Yeah, if they could drain the swamp, right?
Then, and I don't know how you get rid of the deep state. I guess they think they can elect their way to getting rid of it, which makes no sense. If they're truly a deep state, then elections won't touch them, right?
In theory, right, you could just get an outsider to become the president and have him, you know, just sort of... Andrew Jackson with a whip drive everyone out of out of their positions, appoint new people who weren't part of the deep state, in theory.
But if the deep state is what you are suggesting it is, and if it does exist, then I think you're closer than the Republicans are to some sort of puppet master types that are not actually holding a job that someone could publicly cut.
Yeah, they're like the World Economic Forum people. Right. That's the deep state.
Or the Bilderbergers or whoever. Or, you know, off-book CIA payroll people or, you know, that kind of thing. The people that are getting paid from the drug money that the CIA might be bringing in. That kind of thing.
You can't just appoint a new World Economic Forum or a new Bilderberg director.
Yeah, so I don't think that the Republicans use the deep state as a sort of fantasy to get Republicans to believe in their preferred political candidates. Oh, you should vote for this guy. He's not one of the deep state. He'll be a completely corrupt a-hole who will totally sell your freedoms down the river. But they want you to believe something different about them. So they've created this other state and they've put all the black marks of the state all over the deep state. Oh, deep state's all that's where all the bad people are. See, there's certain good people in government and they're not part of the deep state. So we just got to get rid of the deep state and then everything will be great. Now, I don't know what the leftists see the deep state as. Maybe Joe Rogan is giving us some insight into the beliefs about the deep state amongst the left, and that is that, well, the deep state's good. They're helping keeping things together. More coming up here in moments. It's Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Ian and Aria in the studio tonight. You can join us online, of course, anytime at freetalklive.com. Don't forget, you can join us on the phones right now at 603-283-6160. You can take control of the airwaves. You don't have to talk about the so-called deep state. Joe Rogan weighing in a conversation, apparently, with a CIA agent and defending the idea of the deep state, saying that we need the deep state to hold things together or something like that. I don't have
the exact
quote.
Well, that's
sort
of what the role of the Constitution was supposed to be, right? Is so that if you did elect this lunatic like Joe Biden, who didn't know where he was half the time.
There were checks and balances.
Yeah. That it was still okay because he couldn't just, you know, declare war and send the troops off to, you know, Kuwait or wherever.
Turns out they don't declare war anymore.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we could either have a deep state or we could have had the Constitution.
Yeah. All you really have is just the state. Yeah. And I don't know who came up with the term, the deep state. I don't know what the history of it is. But it has been used to justify continuing the state. Because if it weren't for the deep state concept, when Democrats are in office, Republicans might be more inclined to consider more liberty-oriented ideas at that time. But they want to keep the people on the right interested in continuing the political process, continuing to elect people into positions of power by trying to trick them into thinking that there's this cabal of people out there that is called the deep state that somehow they can do something about and only put good people into the offices instead. And the thing they don't understand is power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so even if you are electing someone who's quote unquote good, the odds are they will not be good long after they get into the office.
And if the deep state was real in that sense, then you would have no chance of getting this good person elected in the first place.
If they're effective at doing what they're supposedly doing.
Right. Like if the
Which
deep state was real and it did not want Donald Trump to become president, then Donald Trump would not have become president.
Yeah, that's a great point. And there are a lot of people who will say that whoever's pulling, if there are people out there pulling the strings.
I tend to think there are, maybe not as directly as some people would think, but I mean, we know things like the World Economic Forum, the Bilderberg Group, these things are real and they are pulling strings.
Then Trump was part of that.
Oh, absolutely.
Some people do not believe that. They will never believe that about Trump. Even after 4 years of relatively ineffective swamp draining, you know, he did not accomplish the things that he purported that he was going to do that theoretically he could have done some things about if he had actually had whatever political will was necessary to carry out those actions. But he didn't.
Of course not.
So, you know, again, I don't know how far those tentacles go, those, you know, puppet strings, if you will, how deep if this deep state actually exists. I don't know. I don't have any opinion about whether or not the deep state is real. I think it's just the state. The state is what it is. It is designed to stay in place. It's in the name, right? The word state is like the way things are, right? The things stay the same. They are the state. And so
that's a good point.
That's what the state is. It doesn't want to innovate. It doesn't want to get better. It doesn't want to become humane. It doesn't care about you. It's not going to grow a conscience. It's not going to have empathy. And it never will. And it doesn't matter who you elect to it.
No, of course not. And these things like, in my opinion, things like the Bilderberg Group, the World Economic Forum, even if the state as existed today, even if they weren't utilizing it directly, as soon as one or the other came into existence, you would have... I think what I'm trying to say is that they're one and the same. The Bilderberg Group, the World Economic Forum, the state, mm-hmm. all of these things, they're just different facets of the same diamond, I guess. It's just people sure. trying to control one another.
Absolutely.
For their own benefit.
Yep. Whether they be Republican or Democrat,
yeah.
that's what it's all about. It's all about punishing your enemies and rewarding your friends. That's what these people do with the power that they have. And the average people just get crushed under the wheels of the machinery of the state.
Yeah, because they're the ones being exploited so that the politicians, so that the world rulers can reward their friends, so that they have something to reward their friends with. The average person has to be stolen from.
Right, and you can look at different areas of how that stealing goes and how that oppression happens, whether it be conscripting people into a military to die for Putin or for Zelensky or you know whoever it is we're talking about in the moment. Or
the United States, because let's not forget, the United States still has Selective Service. They still have the draft.
Yeah, they could flip it back on anytime they wanted to. Or whether it's, you know, insanely inflating the money supply and crushing people economically by taking the value literally out of their pockets and out of whatever savings that people have of those who actually have managed to save some money, because there's plenty of people that just live paycheck to paycheck because the state has been siphoning off all potential value from so many people's lives.
Didn't you correct me a week or two ago and say it was something like 60% now?
65%, I think.
Almost 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
People living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, and that's going to get worse.
Yeah, thanks, government.
We were just talking about this rental story that Sarah brought up earlier in the show where some people are now paying 30 or 40% more. There was a couple that they were interviewing on 60 Minutes that the company that was, or the whoever it was, that was renting their house to them wanted 40% more of a rental increase. 40% from 1 year to the next is a huge jump. They managed to negotiate it down to 30%. And when they talked to the guy, one of the people who was doing the renting, owner of the house, but the tenants, they said, well, you know, did you feel like this was an outrageous price? And he said, well, I looked at other houses in the market, looked at 30 other examples, and all of them were more expensive. So he managed to negotiate down from 40% to 30%, but still, that's a huge increase. And he said, our refrigerator looks a lot different today than it did a year ago.
I bet. And, you know, I don't want people to die, but if you want to drive down rent prices and, you know, property prices and stuff like that, then what you need is a pandemic that kills a bunch of people.
Mm.
You need fewer renters, fewer people buying properties. And
yeah,
of course,
this pandemic didn't do the trick, huh?
We didn't get one of those. We just got more people. For whatever reason, we just got more people wanting to rent and more people wanting to buy property, which drove up property and rental prices.
Well, I don't know if it's per se more people because there are fewer immigrants coming in now, right? Like that's one of the reasons, purportedly, it's one of the best excuses I've seen for why there are so many jobs available, but yet so few, like the unemployment rate is low in New Hampshire, but yet there is a ton of jobs available.
And that wasn't the case prior to the pandemic. I mean, the unemployment rate has not changed that much, but there are a lot more help wanted signs up now.
Right. So that's because
it doesn't compute.
Well, that's because there are people who aren't looking for work. So if you are not looking for work, you don't count as unemployed.
How are they still not looking for work, though?
I don't know. They must be living on welfare. Living in their parents' basement, living on welfare, one or the other, or something like that. And by the way, more people are going to have to turn to that as rent prices start going, continue to go through the roof, as housing prices continue to go through the roof. It's sort of the American thing to want to move out of your parents' house, but you're going to start seeing a lot of people not moving out or moving back in.
Well, it'll be okay. The government will come up with a central bank digital currency, and it will send them $2,000 every single month that they can use to pay their rent, and that will all be taken care of for them.
Yeah, everything will be great until the price of the hamburger goes up to $1,000.
Well, sure.
Or $100.
That's a future problem for them,
yeah.
But for not people who get away from the USD.
All right, the number here is 603-283-6160. You can weigh in and share your thoughts on whatever's on your mind. We'll talk more about inflation and how to deal with it, according to the mainstream media. Yeah. Free Talk Live, phones open here. All of a sudden, a bunch of calls rolled in. We're going to try to get to everybody here. Your thoughts are welcome. 603-283-6160. People just love calling in the last half hour of the show for whatever reason. But we'll get to them.
Well, that's when we get to all the stuff that we didn't really, like, want to talk about, like inflation and stuff like that. Like, yeah, inflation sucks, and it's worth talking about, but, like, we've been talking about inflation through the last 10 years, so...
But more so recently, and actually, I did want to talk about inflation tonight, because I've got a really ridiculous story from Bloomberg.
I know, we're going to end up having to put it off yet.
Until tomorrow, yeah. If we get a chance, we'll start it. But we're going to go to your phone calls first. It's Aria and Ian in the studio. Don't forget to join us online at freetalklive.com. Let's jump right into your calls and thoughts. First up, we've got Will in Texas. You're on Free Talk Live, Will.
You guys are so negative.
Why do you say that?
Oh, yeah, I just keep complaining and whining and whining and craning, complaining.
About what?
Yeah, you're whining and complaining. I'm sorry, you guys. I should have been checked out, and I'm not. And there's a bunch of beeping stuff going on. I apologize.
Well, if you want, I can put you on hold if it's if it's a problem.
I'm done now. I'm done.
I'm going to take issue with what you're saying here. I don't consider myself to be negative at all. I'm actually an optimist. If I wasn't an optimist, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I believe there's a chance for freedom to win. I think that it's only going to happen in New Hampshire because of the concentration of activists here. I'm fairly pessimistic for the rest of the world, but I think that if we can actually free New Hampshire, we'll set an example, and then maybe some other parts of the world will follow suit. So I am optimistic. It's a long road.
When I said done, I was talking about my transaction there. I was just teasing you guys about being negative because I agree. I think you're very positive. And,
okay.
And are you? How's your voice? You sound kind of. I'm behind on the podcast, and I haven't. You okay there with your voice?
I mean, I've been better. It has improved a lot within the last week or so. I also happen to be sick at the moment, though, and that's sort of undoing a lot of it. But at this point in time, it seems like I really just have to learn how to speak with this voice, right?
I am not convinced that it has raised your vocal pitch.
It has.
It has? Okay. You know yourself better than I do.
It's raised like the default, right? I'm still capable. Like my average speaking voice is probably about what it was back then, but that was because I tend to speak at a higher pitch anyway. But it's like it lowered the bass level, the default, right?
So there's less bass, you mean, you think?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very much like a guitar string, right? Or a violin string or whatever, you know. What they did was shorten the string, and previously, instead of shortening the string, I would just like fret it at a higher pitch, and that was the pitch that I spoke at. But now it's like that's where the string is cut off at, so I can't use that lower register. So it doesn't actually increase the pitch of your voice as much as it does raise the default pitch. And I wasn't really speaking at the default pitch in the first place. So
does that mean you're putting less effort into speaking now as a result?
It does.
Okay. All right. So that's a benefit.
It does. And that's why my voice comes out without the oomph to it that it used to have, because that effort used to be there, and now I don't know how to put that effort there.
And you haven't gotten your voice back fully yet to really experiment with it. Okay, interesting. Right. Will, what else did you want to share tonight?
Well, and then he got sick. Or then she got sick also. So there's they don't help nothing, right? So anyway, I was gonna say, like, you know, my grandfather, he's like 95 years old, and my grandmother died. She was like 92 or 93 or something. You know, she died a couple years ago. And all said and done, you know, like, I'm just very blessed and I have a lot to be thankful for. I think we all kind of, it's easier to complain. I was teasing you guys, okay? You know,
sure.
Teasing you. I feel like it was easier to, you know, it's...
There are a lot of people who like to complain. And I talked about this at the Porcupine Freedom Festival last year, where during the porcupine rants that they have each year, you had on stage myself, Jeremy Kaufman, and Tom Woods. Tom Woods, who had been interrogated by the FBI at some point during his life. Jeremy Kaufman, who was currently and still is dealing with the SEC.
Yep.
And then myself, who had just months before been raided and arrested by the FBI. And all of us are smiling and having a good time and being positive and optimistic.
Right.
And we had these libertarians come up just talking about how horrible things are and bashing other libertarians. It's like, dudes, if we can be up here smiling and getting along and being hopeful, then so can you.
Mm.
Right? It's not hard to put a smile on your face. Well, you know what? This is going to work out. Just change the way you view the world. But there's so much of that. People who aren't in New Hampshire,
yeah,
they don't see that, man. All they have
it's negative
is that
elsewhere.
Online libertarian nasty infighting that...
That's really all they
have.
Now
that I'm in New Hampshire, I see it and I'm like, God, I... You know, just there, but by the grace of God goes me, or whatever it is they say. I'm like, I could so easily have been one of those libertarians in Las Vegas or California or wherever, just shouting into the abyss at one another, accomplishing nothing, and just being convinced that everyone else was the problem. And if we just one more vote for Gary Johnson, everything would have been different.
Yeah, now they're fighting over the control of the Libertarian Party now. So the big thing for the online libertarians is, we're going to show them in Reno, and they're going to go to the national convention and have a big fight. You know, not physical, but, you know, over politics, basically, over taking over a political party that no one cares about, that has absolutely no effect nationwide, has almost never elected anyone to any kind of national level office.
Well, I see, that's just it, though. If you put my dog and Coconut in the same room with a bowl of food, they're not going to fight over it because they're both well fed. If you take two starving puppies and you throw them a scrap of food, they're going to fight to the death over it. And that's the Libertarian Party. They will fight each other to the death over that little scrap that they do get.
And it's nothing. I mean, anyway, go ahead, Will. Anything else you want to share?
Well, no. Like I said, when I was 17, you know, y'all are always positive, and I like what you said there about the, you know, like screaming into the abyss, you know, and wherever, you know, and you're not there. And I do take y'all's message is positive. And lastly, I guess a message I set, I guess, do the best you can, you know, all of you, everyone, to be as thankful as you can for the things you have. And
yeah, that's always a good idea. It's always good to be, you know, show gratitude. And thank you, Will, for your call here tonight. I mean, expressing gratitude is one of the most powerful things that you can do to be more positive. Because if you're thin, whenever you're expressing gratitude, you're thinking about things you appreciate. You're thinking about the good things in your life. And you're putting out there, if you will, into the universe, positive things. You're acknowledging good things. And so the more you can feel good, the more that you can focus on the positive and focus on good things, the more good things you tend to see. If you focus on negative things, you focus on bad things that are happening, you're more likely to be aware of negative things and bad things. Obviously, bad things happen to everybody. It's inevitable that your life is going to have ups and downs. But if you can acknowledge that and stay positive, forgiving and loving and understanding towards people, even when they wrong you, then that will change a lot for you.
That's very much where I come from with it. A lot of people like to say things like, well, if you just think positive, then you will manifest positivity and you'll experience more positive things. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but you will notice the positive things that you experience more frequently than you do the negative because you are focusing on that.
Correct. Yeah, sort of like in the same way that when you see a car for the first time, like, you know, let's say your friend buys somebody you know buys a new car, and you'd never noticed that car before. Obviously, it's been on the roads, but it's never been in your awareness in any meaningful sense. And then all of a sudden, you start seeing that car everywhere because now it's something you're aware of, it's something you've thought about, and it's something that stands out to you. Positive and negative beliefs or positive and negative thinking can do the same thing, where again, you will experience those things in a greater awareness. Not that they're necessarily happening more often, although some might suggest that could be the case.
That's a really good way of putting it. I'm going to text that.
Yeah. Well, you can have it for free. It's an idea.
Oh, that's true.
You can copy ideas and, you know, the other person doesn't lose them.
And it will never detract from yours.
That's right. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. If you want to share your thoughts with us, we are happy to hear from you. We have more people that are on the line. We're coming to them coming up in the remaining moments of Free Talk Live, but maybe enough room for you at 603-283-6160. This is Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You can join the show at 603-283-6160. You can also join us online at freetalklive.com. We do have an Odyssey channel on which we do live streaming, and there are archives available there as well over at video.freetalklive.com. You can go there and follow our channel. We sure would appreciate it. Over 1,000 people are following the Odyssey channel, and I think that's great. It's a good start. We've been on the platform for as long as it has existed, and it's a great platform. It's based on Library, LBRY.com, which is an open-source, blockchain-based media sharing protocol. And it's a really awesome technology.
I was not aware that Library is open-source.
So, of course it is.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So presumably you could create your own version of the Library software if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't want
They're doing such a good job, though. Yeah. So there's nobody else has bothered to try to do that because it's completely uncensorable. Library now, Odyssey's a platform, so they could opt to not include everything that's on Library there if they wanted to. But on Library, you can upload anything you want, and no one can tell you can't do that, which is pretty amazing. So be sure you check that out. Go to lbry.com to learn more about Library, and check out our Odyssey channel at video.freetalklive.com. Let's go to your phone calls. Jim is listening on the radio to WNDB in Daytona Beach. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call. I appreciate it.
What's on your mind?
I don't know. I'm Canadian. I'm a Canadian citizen. I moved to the States to marry my beautiful wife. And I'm really having a problem with this Zelensky character. You know, he's being portrayed as a hero. And I think ignorance in this country is unfortunately reaching critical mass. Mm. Because if you really dive down into the details of what's happening there, I believe, at least in my opinion, Putin was cornered with talk of NATO expansion and putting weapons on their border. For years, he said that that's his red line. And I don't know what American interest is in Ukraine to warrant this war that started. And I think it's going to escalate now that Joe Biden's promising a cyber attack or a chemical attack. I fear it's going to be a false flag attack, and it's going to get us drawn in more.
When you say Biden is promising a cyber attack or a chemical attack, you mean he is talking about how he's expecting that to happen, not that he is per se going to start it?
Yes, that the Russians are going to do it, and it's going to be a false flag attack, I believe, at least in my opinion. And just too many dominoes are falling into place. I don't know why the U.S. is determined to not have the dollar as the reserve currency anymore. I think they're pushing Russia into a corner to use some alternative trading system, and China is going to step up to the plate. If now they're being threatened by the United States and NATO, basically saying don't aid Moscow. And I think,
do you think it's the intention of the U.S. federal government to totally kill the dollar by doing these things, or are they just incompetent and that is ultimately going to destroy the petrodollar, though it wasn't their intentions?
I think they can't make this many mistakes. You know, they're batting 1,000, batting 100 in making mistakes. Yes, it's intentional. I think they want to use a digital dollar. And once that's implemented, you know, libertarians are screwed because everything's going to be monitored, political donations are going to be monitored. And at that point, it's checkmate, and we're going to be controlled entirely.
Well, I don't think libertarians are going to be screwed by the digital dollar, because the smart ones will be opting out of the government money entirely and going to alternatives like gold backs and cryptocurrency.
There's also the fact that if the petrodollar dies, then the U.S. digital dollar never amounts to anything. Right. Like the U.S. government, they need Saudi Arabia and Russia and other governments throughout the world to want this currency, whether it's digital or whether it's actual paper.
Well, it helps them to have it as the world reserve currency because it allows them to print trillions up and have it and have it diluted easier because it's used worldwide.
But if they don't have that, then they're just another Venezuela inflating their own currency. So no. The two things would conflict with whether it's digital or physical.
They can still screw people, though, if they're their own Venezuela. It just means that people are going to get screwed harder and faster.
Yes, and also, and you brought up a good point with Saudi Arabia. What are we doing with Saudi Arabia? We're going to make a deal with Iran.
I'm not making deals with any of these people. I just want to make clear.
Oh, not you. No, of course you.
When you say we, you mean the federal government? You're not part of them, right?
Yes, yes, yes. It's like... yeah, we're pissing Saudi Arabia off. India is going to start trading in rubles with China or yuan in China. And it just seems like all these pieces since Trump left office are fitting into place. It's almost as if they learned their lesson by allowing Trump to become in power, because I think he was America first. You guys may disagree, but at least.
Why do you still believe that after 4 years and he didn't drain the swamp?
Well, I think because what else did you expect him to do? He was accused of being a Russian agent. Then the
Who cares
moment,
what they
literally,
accused him of?
Well, he didn't have enough political capital.
Oh, the usual claim. He's the president of the United States. Now, when people normally use the claim, I don't have the political capital, I normally hear that from state representatives who don't want to put forward a principled pro-liberty bill because they're worried other people won't support it and they don't have the capital to make that happen. But they're not the most powerful executive in the Western world. If Trump wanted to do things as the president of the United States, obviously he can't repeal laws on his own, but he can certainly fire bureaucrats within the executive administration. That's certainly something he could do. And did he do it much, if at all? Yeah, he fired some people, but then he just hired some more in-state actors to replace them. The old guard is just shuffled around.
If I'm using your logic, then why hasn't any president solved the education problem in the country or the drug problem? If you're saying
because it's not a problem for them.
No president is a libertarian. And so none of them are going to do what could be done, which is to say, tell the DEA to stop enforcing the war on drugs. That would solve the drug problem mostly overnight. Now, obviously, he can't legalize the drugs without Congress acting in that particular way. But if he basically shut down the agency from doing anything about it, then that would be one way to majorly change the drug situation overnight. And as far as education is concerned, again, I don't know what options the president has to control that situation. But obviously, you know, the states need to stop taking money from the federal government, and then they'll have more local control.
Well, how far do you think, if we play out your scenario and he wanted to drain the swamp, how far do you think he would have gotten before members of Congress and the Senate would have said he's unstable and invoked whatever amendment that they wanted to initially use against him, that he's mentally unstable?
Joe Biden rambles on about how Corn Pop was a bad dude. I mean, and Congress isn't doing anything about removing him from power.
Well, Congress did impeach Trump at least, what was it, once, twice or something like that?
That's true.
So it's not like that stopped them from doing that. You know, you're just making excuses for the guy. Obviously, you're a big fan of him, but the truth of the matter is he didn't do jack diddly to make the government smaller while he was there. I'll give him credit where credit's due. He did release some people from behind bars, but most presidents do that to some extent. And he did pull some of the troops out of Afghanistan, but he didn't finish that particular job. He didn't start any new wars while he was there, so he does get that credit. So, like,
that's a rare one.
He wasn't the worst president of my lifetime. I would argue he was the most entertaining president of my lifetime, so I'll give him credit where credit's due, but he didn't do anything to make the government smaller. During COVID, he completely bought the COVID line. He was out there pimping masks. Obviously, he didn't pimp it as hard as Biden and, you know, his wife or whatever, but Trump was out there, you know, telling people they need to get the vaccine and saying he's going to make the vaccine available sooner, and it's all about... So he's totally with the state.
He did, though. Well, okay, wait, hold on a second. Let's be honest now. If Trump didn't have his business experience, and I agree with you, he wasn't perfect. I'm not putting a halo over his head by any stretch of the imagination. Please don't get me wrong. However, he developed that vaccine faster than, do you think Obama would have created
it? Who cares?
I don't think Trump developed any vaccine.
Trump didn't do anything for developing. If you're going to say that he somehow made the FDA approve things sooner rather than later, that doesn't impress me. That just means that he wanted people to put an experimental vaccine in their veins, which is what the state has been calling for years now.
I mean, which is fine, in my opinion, if that's the choice that an individual makes.
But
was when it was about force.
Yeah, the state wasn't giving you a choice in a lot of cases. They were saying, you either get this vaccine or you're going to get fired from your job. You get this vaccine or you're not going to work for the medical industry anymore. Now, obviously, that came out under Biden, but all of these things were built on, right? Like, Trump provided the steps towards what Biden did, and Trump was building on what Obama did prior to him. The fact that anybody can believe that any of these presidents are good in any way, shape, or form is just shocking to me. It's amazing delusion.
Yeah, they're all varying degrees of terrible.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call tonight, Jim. I wish Trump would post on his damn social so we could at least get his opinions, because he is entertaining. I mean, I would follow him if he did, just because he's entertaining, not because I agree with the guy. We'll see you tomorrow night. FreeTalkLive.com.